going to talk about consulting versus expert witness. And I could add a few more alphabet soup to the end of my name, but that's not really where my area of assistance for expert consulting happens. And my background is that I owned a business for 27 years. I sold my business 6 years ago to a company, and they've employed me for the last five years, and then a year ago another much larger company bought them. And so I haven't been able to be an expert witness or expert consultant because neither of those companies want that kind of liability of having their name tied into things that were controversial. But I have been involved in a lot of expert testimonies or testimony in front of a hearing examiners and that type of thing. But I kind of bring something that I'll probably be doing more of in the near future, but kind of got away from it in the recent past. So the client's idea of an expert is someone called in at the last second to share the blame. And that's really what the expert is. I've been there, done it many times. The lawyer's idea of an expert is the person with one more experience than the rest of the people in the room. That's the key. Make sure they have one more experience that can say, hey, they've done it more times than you have. And then my idea of an expert is someone that can take a complicated concept and make it understandable to the average person, because that's who you're going to need to talk to. It's the average person. We can all talk our own in a group, and we have our jargon, and we can bring things up, but how do you make it understandable? Being the best in your field really does not make you a successful expert or consultant. You have to make your point understandable, because otherwise no one cares how good you are. You know, you can have all kinds of fantastic experience and knowledge and information, but if you can't make it understandable, you can't do it. And then there's a very, very fine line between representing your client and advocating for your client. And, you know, as the lawyers are the advocates for the client, you're representing your client's information, provide your client with information. And so you have to play that dance. You have to dance it, and sometimes you don't even have to like the people that you're dancing with, but you have to figure out a way to make it work. Regardless of what all consultants think, we're not lawyers. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of this stuff we're repeating, and none of us, I didn't see anybody else's presentation before today. You know, being an expert is scientifically correct, but in the legal procedures, being right doesn't necessarily win the case. There's a lot of procedural stuff, and so again, you have to work with the legal team to make sure that information is presentable, because you may never get a chance to present the scientifically correct part of it. When there's two expert witnesses, and I've seen this happen, the judge is just going to say, both of your testimony is offsetting. We're going to make the decision completely on procedure and precedent. That's it. It doesn't matter what you said. And the jury is even worse, because they're going to look at it and be totally confused. They have very little, in most cases, they have very little expertise. The guy with the lab coat or the longest alphabet soup is the one that they expect to know what they're talking about, even if they don't understand it. So that's going to be sometimes the way that the things work. And the most cost-effective expert witness is the opposing party's expert witness. And that's where I come in. The expert witness isn't required to identify anything that the attorney is not aware of or doesn't know enough about to ask the right questions. That was brought up before, is that is where the expert consultant comes in. Aaron talked about keep things short, yes, no. Answers that should be, you know, direct. Don't talk on and on about something because then you open yourself up for a follow-up question. So a good expert witness is going to be answer the question, keep it tight, and but they're not required to say, yeah, but that's not exactly what, you know, that's not the whole story. You know, the expert will be brought in to discuss complicated issues, they'll use a professional jargon, you know, conclusions, professional opinion, and then the consultant provides a simplified version of that jargon and make it understandable and allow the legal team then to challenge the expert in language that the jury, judge, or hearing officer can understand. It's not our job to damage or disparage the expert witness, but we can find flaws where they have to admit that their testimony is limited. They some of the assumptions that they may be used, you know, based their professional opinion is based on a lot of times, yeah, there's facts and then there's assumptions. And so then the other part of it is defining the gaps in their testimony that aren't benefiting the client. That, as I said, the thing that they just leave out. And we need to think, you know, as a consultant, I'm helping the attorney, I'm going, hey, wait a minute, there's something disconnecting between here and here. They came to a good conclusion, but there's something in there, there's a gap in there. So the difference between the two of them, the witness is actually on trial. The consultant is Oz. I'm the guy behind the curtain. Don't pay no attention to me. I'm not there, but I'm helping the attorney provide information. In this situation, I think Aaron did a good job saying your history, your education, your experience, your certifications, your qualifications, your fees and payments, associations, discovery, you're a target. Everything that you're doing is part of that target. As Oz, I bring experience to the table. I have education and knowledge, but I don't have to. I'm not up on the stand. Nobody's asking me what my education was. Certifications, I shouldn't say they don't matter. They matter to me. I'm certified, but it's not going to be something that you're not comparing certifications between the assistant to the attorney and versus the expert. You don't do qualification comparisons. Basically, if the attorney hires you, it can become attorney privilege, kind of, but at the same time, because you're not a consultant being placed on the stand, typically all your stuff, there's not going to be a search because all you're doing is providing a service. And then basically the pay is the same. I have to say the few times that I've been an expert, my expert fees were twice what my regular fees were, and we're going to talk about this subpoena thing don't ever let them get away with that one. The witness is in the hot seat, the hot, white hot glare of the hot seat. Spot answers, you don't get a phone a friend. You know, there's no reference checks while you're standing there. It's there, it's right there. You have to be able to answer. You can get personal and professional attacks. You're a target. You got a target on your back. You know, it's your area of expertise is where your professional opinion has to stay. Whereas I'm not kind of tied to that. And then the consultant, I'm just looking for missing information. That's the primary thing I'm doing, whether it be depositions or discovery or in the trial itself. I'm looking for missing information from the expert. I provide spot questions. Those questions that come up that you go, hey, they left something out, ask this. Finding inconsistencies. That's the most damaging part, is the inconsistencies. And that's why what Aaron talked about is keeping it really short to the point. The inconsistencies happen when somebody blabs on and on and on because they start out saying something, and then they're talking, and all of a sudden they say something a little different than what they said before, and that's going to trip you up. Understanding is more important than the PhD. Understanding all of the little connections is more important than my credential. And then I identify alternate conclusions to the witness's opinion. Just the opinion is a conclusion. And if there's data there that could actually generate a different conclusion, and the lawyer can then come in and say, wouldn't you agree that using your own data, you could come to this conclusion as well? And all of a sudden now, the expert witness is balancing two different conclusions. And it's a lot less stress being a consultant. The five C's for an expert: being clear, concise, complete, consistent, and correct. That's the five C's. Keeping that, and I use that everywhere. Clear, concise, complete, consistent, and correct. You don't win any prize for showing off how much you know, particularly in court, because everybody's going to fall asleep. Make sure the judge, jury, or hearing officer understands the issue in terms that they understand, not what your professional peers would understand. This isn't what happens. You don't fall under they don't fall under the consulting spell. They don't all of a sudden say, "Oh, everything that you say has convinced me of your intellectual superiority, and so I'm going to agree with you." That's not what happens. You have to make them understand it in their manner. You don't win a prize for the volume of information you provide. Be direct, be brief, be quiet. Well, the other option to that is be seated. And we've had the same thing. Use the KISS for judge and juries. Keep it simple and stupid. The 15-second rule is that the average person can't comprehend or retain information that takes longer than 15 seconds to hear or read. That's why you see all my slides, bang, 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 15 seconds, you won't remember it. You get long narratives get lost in the translation. Everything should be in three key points. Sometimes two, but three key points. Never more than three key points whenever you're trying to make those points. Being complete, the goal is to address the issue. Need to be clear and concise, but don't leave loose ends, or the lawyer that I'm helping with is going to eat your lunch on cross-examination. The loose ends are the worst ends to leave. Consistent, and I talked about before, I'm looking for inconsistencies. Sometimes I'm just looking for where do you seem uncomfortable? You're talking, everything comes across, you're really confident, and then there's something that you're just kind of like, I didn't really want to talk about that. You know, if something that you keep talking, you're familiar with, sometimes people that are familiar with something or feel that they're an expert in, they start becoming they have contempt for what other people understand, and they start overlooking the errors that might be in that repeated thing that they're always saying. And don't overstate. Be correct. Don't overexplain. Avoid numbers, because that's really an easy one to get tripped up on. If you're incorrect in one area, the entire testimony is in question. It's what I call the dirty fold-out tray syndrome. And that's where if you are on an airplane and you pull the tray out and it's dirty, you're starting to wonder how well are they managing the maintenance of that engine on my airplane. Same thing happens. The moment a jury or a judge hears that you were a little incorrect on one thing, all of a sudden everything else starts falling apart. This is a way big one. This is just kind of following up on a case example. Had an expert testifying. They expounded, had huge detail. I mean, went on and on. The field conditions that were found, in quotes, I started thinking about that third person that they kept using. It didn't seem right, so I told the lawyer, ask them what time of year that you were on the site. They said, hey, that's not relevant. The same in conditions you'll find regardless of the time of year. I said, that wasn't the question. The team reviewed it several times throughout the year. The lawyer said, when did you go to the site? The answer, or did you go to the site? And the answer was no. That was it. Now, if they would have started out right from the beginning and said, my expert team went to the site, they work for me, they work under me, I trust their data, I trust the information that they brought to me, and here's my testimony, would have been fine. But he actually was hiding the fact that he had never been to the site. And that ended that. Another one is a case example of number two is highway project. There was a large fill. It was in an area that was adjacent or through an old wetlands, but it was adjacent to a wetlands. The entire wetland rose. The geotechnical engineer kept saying, well, it was an act of God. So I went through the drilling logs and the maps, which weren't very clear at all. And so the question was, what is a standard separation for samples on geotechnical? So notice, I'm not practicing in my field. This isn't soil science. This is geotechnical. But I understood the information enough to be able to provide the legal team with the question they needed to ask. When they said that the standard is 500 to 1,000 feet, but the sample separation that they used in the area of the failure was 3,600 feet. Again, it wasn't an act of God anymore. It was an act of omission. And then the case example I have, number three, is a highway project that had fill for wetlands and open water. It was open water that was flooded by a dam, and then in the wintertime it would be basically a mud flat. And they were at a public hearing. Witness got up, talked at length, again, justified their method. It was all very good, appeared correct. But as I looked at everything in the submittals, I'm looking through it and I'm going, God, they've got, 5 miles here, but they left out this 2,200 feet, zero information, no delineation report, no, not even part of it. And they just said, oh, well, it's just part of the mudflat. It doesn't have any value. The end of the testimony was, I didn't have to actually be an expert. I just asked for the data for that 2,200 feet. And the entire thing went back to square one. The Corps of Engineers said, you need to go back out and do your full delineation of everything that's there because it's adjacent to and it was wetlands and they just didn't have any information. So it was an additional wetland fill. So in any event, that was my case history number three, and I wrap up with that.